down. I view the morning with alarm. The British Museum had lost its charm. How long, I wondered, could this thing last? But the age of miracles hadn't passed. For suddenly I saw you there, and through fog in London town the sun was shining everywhere.
Finally, a conversation with one of Australia's busiest and most thoughtful architects, Richard Francis Jones. Richard recently delivered the annual Wilkinson Lecture at the University of Sydney, and today we'll touch on some of the ideas in his lecture, and also launch out into the world at large, into the realm of politics and ideas. Richard's company, FJMT, is behind many new buildings in Australia. The Law Building at the University of Sydney, for example, is one of his latest. By Design visited this building, and we have links to it on our website. And a couple of weeks ago, Richard's firm was announced as the architects for the new Tasmania Art Gallery in Hobart. Well, Richard, welcome to the By Design studio, and congratulations on your new role as a father with the birth of your son, who's your first child, I understand.
Yes, that's right, and thank you very much. He's just over a week old now.
Well, you now have a new dual identity as father and architect, and it's the topic of identity that you're interested in at the moment. It was among the things that you talked about in your Wilkinson lecture. And this new identity crisis in architecture, according to you, it seems to be about consumption.
Yes, what I endeavour to talk about there is the confusion between this idea of giving a sense of identity and giving a brand. A brand, of course, being associated very much with consumption, and identity going a bit deeper to the nature of actually who we are and where we come from, a kind of connection, a cultural connection, rather than one that is kind of purchased or promoted.
And this is in the context for this is that the public identity of our cities has been eroded, and private capital, if you like, brands, has come to dominate.
Yes, and this is partly, well, it's a caution I'm really sounding here about also the nature of public space in our cities, that in fact a lot of spaces that we might think of as being public are not quite so. That we, shopping centres, for example, airports, even hotels, a lot of these spaces are actually spaces for purchase rather than spaces to be in. And an example I can give you is if you just try to think, well, where is there actually a political protest in a shopping centre? Well, never, in fact. The only crush of people is for the sale. And these spaces don't actually allow us to just be or to interact as citizens, but they kind of impose a slight restlessness on us and a pressure to purchase.
Now, but despite the tone of what you've just said, I think you do say, don't you, that these changes are not all to be bemoaned, but they are serious changes. So as an architect, what kind of responsibility do you have in this area to show us how things have changed and to offer up a way of visualising and expressing these changes?
Yeah, I think it's important to step back, you know, and look at what's happening. And as us as designers, in every project we undertake, we do think about the opportunity to create public space. Space that is truly public and can be used by anyone and shared. So these are areas I'm interested in. And I think, you know, one of the areas that has changed, I just gave a slightly negative example or a cautionary example about the domination of purchase and shopping, is the virtual public space of communications technology, the internet, YouTube and so on, which allows us to communicate with people across a vast network. And is actually a real progression of freedom of information and public exchange.
Well, talking about the virtual, what has Facebook have to say to your new public gallery that you're going to be building in Tasmania. How does an architect change and introduce Facebook into the brief, or is that just not your job?
Well, I think it's not so much Facebook itself as the way it interacts with the buildings and the spaces that we design. So one of the things that, about virtual space and virtual exchange of ideas is that it allows us to take the activities that happen in one space and project them all over the world. And we see this where there are protests, for example, in Tehran or in London with the G20 and so on, that the events that take place in these spaces are then communicated across the world through mobile phones, onto YouTube and so on. But another important thing is that these events actually do take place somewhere. They aren't actually taking place in a virtual domain. They're taking place in a physical domain.
Well, yes. I mean, the G20 protests in London took place outside the British Museum, which is not the British Museum. I've still got the song on my mind. It took place outside the Bank of England,
yeah.
Which of course has a symbolic significance for them. So this means that buildings, I suppose, are taking on a sort of mediated form, mediated by all those mobile phones and virtual worlds. Is this what's happening as you see it?
Yeah, we've added another layer to it with the communications technology, in the sense you've got the public spaces, the squares, the streets, the lanes of our city, and it's almost like you've laid over this another virtual network of communications. And these intersect in all sorts of different ways. And as architects, of course, what we're most concerned about is the design of the public domain and the public space, and making sure that that is preserved as space for citizens, not just places for consumers.
This is By Design on ABC Radio National, and today my guest in conversation is the architect Richard Francis Jones. And we're talking about identity and how architecture is part of change in our contemporary life. Richard, the point you're raising here is that increasingly in all our public buildings, we tend to be there to consume something, to purchase something. We're no longer there just to meet. How does this change the identity of a public space, and how do you as an architect approach it?
There can be subtle but quite profound changes, because in a space that is designed around consumption to encourage shopping, there is often an emphasis on movement. Escalators take people across floors. There's spaces are designed to channel people through areas. And even when we pause, we're surrounded by stimulus and encouraged to purchase. This is the kind of design of a space for shopping and consumption. In the design of a public space, in a public building, there are other issues which come to play, other ideas about what is this, why does this building appear this way? What are the values of the community that we're trying to reflect and represent in the design of this building? And how is the space that we're creating a space that doesn't place these pressures on us, but actually provides us the opportunity and the environment to think, that stimulates us in a different way, not towards purchase?
So are you suggesting that in a lot of public buildings that are about consumption, even though there might be a lot of movement within them, escalators and so on, they nonetheless flatten the architecture? The symbolism has changed and it's flattened out a bit.
Well, I think that's true, and I wouldn't call those buildings public in a sense. The buildings that are about retail and commercial uses, that even if they include some public functions, truly public functions, the dominating ideas are about branding, they're about the transitory, and actually these environments are often alienating and they make us feel a little bit restless. In designing for a public space and a public building, we need to make sure that they're spaces that provide a degree of restfulness, perhaps an opportunity to think, exchange ideas, and that the building comes to represent some ideas and some aspirations of the community. You know, an example, for instance, is not far from here in Surrey Hills, we recently finished the Library and Community Centre for the City of Sydney.
It's a very fine building, if I may say so. Thank you.
And that, in that building we gave a lot of thought to how that building can embody green values, how it can have a sense of transparency, how it can be inviting to the whole community, lots of different ages, ethnic groups, and the diversity that makes up our community. How can this building be inviting equally to all of these groups? And we worked very hard and directly with the community to achieve that.
This might be a bit of a tangent, but I don't think it is. It happens that my hairdresser is just a few doors along from there.
Right.
So I was there last Saturday, and I was struck by how that part of Sydney has become quite a thriving place on a Saturday afternoon now.
Yes.
Now, most of the thriving is about consumption. I mean, you can call going to the hairdressers a form of consumption. It's all a form of consumption. There are a lot of shops, there are restaurants and pubs and so on.
Yes.
But there's a lot of street life there. There's a lot of people on the streets meeting and talking. So it's not a simple matter, is it, that you can have these consumption spaces, we can have an authentic public building like yours, and they both, in a way, contribute to a lively street life.
Absolutely. I think that's a very good example of a successful complement of those activities. And one of the most important aspects to that ensemble is the street, is the public street, that these shops and this library are not opening onto an interior shopping mall. They're opening onto a public street with a park just opposite. And that there is, you know, there's a pub, there's a public library and community building, and there's a whole series of shops. So it's making sure the complement is right, but also the spaces that interconnect them and bind them together are truly public.
Then, of course, there are those other layers of architecture that we haven't really spoken about yet, but which are probably worth considering, which is the elevation of architecture to art, which has been prevalent in our time with the rise of architects like, you know, Frank Gehry, Zaha Hadid. Is it all a constantly negotiated space, especially in the world where power's constantly shifting and the influence an architect has is openly contested?
Well, we find there's been a huge rise in modern times, in recent times, in the art museum. You know, it has become a kind of cathedral for us. And we have seen some of the world's finest architects designing these buildings. One of the things that we need to be a little bit cautious about is the way in which these buildings reflect back to us who we are. And this is where my point between branding and identity comes into play. Because at a certain point, we can just import a design from a famous designer, a recognised designer, and we acquire some sense of identity. It's like you or I going out and buying an Armani suit or a Versace suit. You know, we feel good, right? And we're somebody because we've got this suit on. But in fact, really, it makes little difference to who we are. And a truer reflection of who we are is a much more laboured work. You know, it really means thinking about what it is that makes this place particular, that gives it its character, and building buildings which emerge from that specificity rather than a simple import that brings a value on a brand.
Yes, poor old Frank Gehry, after he built the Guggenheim in Bilbao, he was deluged with commissions to build another one somewhere else. Richard Francis Jones, thank you very much for coming in today to talk in conversation with By Design.
My pleasure.
Details of what we've been talking about on our website at abc.net.au/rn/bydesign. That's also our guest book, and it's where you can listen again to the show. Just follow the download directions. The show is produced by Jan Ryan and Mark Wakeley, and Marie de Bettencourt is the sound engineer, and I'm Alan Saunders.